Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, the man that brings you this podcast live and indirect from the Ocean State to the Buckeye State. That would be Providence, Rhode Island to Columbus, Ohio. John Orlando talking at you here on episode number 89, and I am very excited to be back here to talk to each and every one of you. So last time I was out on the airwaves, episode 88.5, technical issues resolved, as I like to call it. I complained a little bit about some of the issues I've had with this particular podcast, and sadly, I had a few other technical issues on this episode of the podcast, so I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there. Please excuse me for maybe misspeaking or stuttering or stammering a little bit when I talk to my guest, whom I will talk about here in a minute. Hey, look, I don't like to edit my conversations with guests. I just like to be natural. You know as well as I do, at times when you talk to someone, when you conversate with them, sometimes you misspeak, you stutter, you stammer, you make a mistake. Well, that's just human nature. And, you know, I know that I did a couple times in my conversation that you're going to hear shortly with independent comic book creator from Columbus, Ohio, Mr. Michael Watson. I'm going to talk a little more about Michael here in a minute, but yeah, there's a little bit of some mistakes on my behalf, and I apologize in advance for it. But hey, I'm not gonna edit. You're gonna get what you get here on the PVD Cast, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent. Plus, to be honest with you, it's a pain in the neck to do a lot of editing, and I don't like to do that. I mean, you know, I don't want to work harder. I want to work smarter. So that's just a fancy way of saying I'm lazy. But I digress. Let's talk a little bit about Michael Watson. Michael's going to come on and talk quite a bit about some of the things that he is very passionate about, which is obviously his creations. Hot Shot, Heroes International, or his two big books. Vigilance is also coming as well. He is a gentleman that created Freestyle Comics and is now part of the stable of creators with Legacy Rising Publications, which is a Columbus-based publishing company that is going to be starting here very soon. They're almost ready to be the powerhouse that they are going to be here in the Buckeye State, but they're putting the final touches to some things, and we'll talk quite a bit about Legacy Rising. We'll talk about Michael's background into comics, which he has a very unusual background. I'm not going to, you know, spoil too much, but he's got a very unusual first impression with comic books, which we'll talk about right off the get-go. And of course, he's going to be at Space, which is the Small Press and Alternative Comics Expo, which is happening here in Columbus, April 9th and 10th. It's going to be at the Northland Performing Arts Center, which is right off of Morris Road in North Columbus. Of course, sponsored by Back Porch Comics. And if you have any questions about Space, definitely go over to backporchcomics.com. They have the hours of the shows, how much admission is, who's all going to be there. And it's a great, great opportunity for you to snag some cool independent comic books and say hello to Michael Watson and Ken Epstein and Victor Dandridge and all the great creators who have been on this podcast. And if you're the first time listening and you're like, I don't know who any of these people are, or maybe you do, hey, do me a favor. Go over to the archive section of PVDcast.com, the official online home of yours truly, and listen to some of the great interviews I've conducted with Bob Corby and Ken Epstein and Steve Steiner and all the great creative types. Jack Wallace, there's so many, and I apologize if I forgot a few folks, but nonetheless, check it out. Go to the archive section of PVDcast.com. And you know what? Enough. I'm not going to ramble anymore. Let's get right on into it. On the other side of this break is my conversation with Mr. Michael Watson. Hey, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the PVD Cast. John Orlando here, sitting down with Mr. Michael Watson. Michael, how you doing, man?
Doing great. Good to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Hey, I appreciate it. As my listeners know, it's been a very trying few weeks for me getting this podcast out. So I appreciate you coming on, and I know that you got a lot to talk about. So let's just go ahead and kind of fill in the listeners as to who Mr. Michael Watson is. You're originally from Cleveland, but now you call C-Bus home, correct?
Yes, that is absolutely correct.
And a graduate of CCAD?
Excellent school. I love that school so very much.
And I did do a little bit of research and found out you're a big comic book fan. And in fact,
just a little bit.
Three of your four children are named after comic book references, correct?
Yes, they are.
You know what? I appreciate that. I admire that. I don't know if I could get away with that. Your wife, man, she's a nice lady, because I don't know too many women to put up with that. But
well, the first one was hers.
Oh, okay.
There was no fight back or argument or like going back and forth on the name for the very first child. So I kind of used that to my advantage. I don't know.
I also know that you said that Wolverine was one of your favorites, and you actually have kind of a backstory to that. So you want to tell some of my listeners why you admire the character Wolverine so much?
Oh, Wolverine. Wolverine's actually the reason I'm even drawing comic books or into geekdom today, because I used to think comic books were stupid.
Really?
I couldn't understand them. I didn't get the whole gruff with them. I was like, why are these boxes here? What's happening? This is dumb. And then I had this friend in sixth grade. His name was Tom, and he was one of my close friends. And he was like, dude, have you ever read X-Men before? And I was like, no. I was like, comic books are stupid. And he was like, we can no longer be and give it an honest try. So, like, the next day, he brought, like, I don't know, like, 25 comic books, all X-Men, in the class. This is in the sixth grade. And I was like, all right, man, I'll give this stuff a shot. Because I used to want to animate. I wanted to draw cartoons, and that's it. And I go home, and I read X-Men number 17. The X-Men, it's Colossus, Wolverine, Psylocke, Jubilee, Iceman, and Cyclops fighting Omega Red in Russia. I mean, the X-Men are getting it handed to them. But this one little short hairy dude with the claws, who looks just like the weakest dude in the whole group. He's got claws for powers. I was like, he kept getting up no matter how hard he got knocked down, no matter how many times he got shot with the Omega beams or the death spore virus that Omega Red has, like thrown in the trees. Like, X-Men got knocked out in one hit, all of them down. Wolverine kept getting back up. And I was like, man, this dude is cool, like, because he's short like me. He's got this little fiery attitude. And like, I just invested in his character because he was so loyal. He was down for the team. Like, they were all down. He wouldn't let Omega Red attack him anymore, even though he had some type of vendetta against Omega Red. But he was still standing in front of the X-Men to keep them from being hurt. And the very next day, I was like, oh, man, we're about to make comic books. And we started a comic book company in the sixth grade.
So I'm going to go back for just a quick second. I think it's odd, because I've talked to many, many creators, and I don't think I've ever heard anybody say comics were stupid and then all of a sudden switched. I got to be honest. So did you not have exposure to comic books prior to the sixth grade?
I had a book before. I just didn't like it. I didn't have anybody to like – I don't know. It probably just wasn't a good story.
Okay.
And, you know, in the 90s, that's when the X-Men were at the height of their popularity. And, you know, you couldn't do anything wrong with X-Men. And, like, I just got the right X-Men book and found the right character. Okay. And that's what it normally takes. It takes the right character at the right time with the right story that gets you invested into them.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha. So from there, you're off to make comic books. And so you had your own comic book company when you were in sixth grade?
Yes.
What was it called?
Man, you know what? I don't remember. I want to say we used my because I did all the drawing. We used my initials, so it was like MJW Comics.
Okay.
And Tom did the writing, and he helped me do the lettering. I did the drawing, and then we expanded because everyone in the school was digging our books, and our teacher would let us sell them during lunch mod. So then we started selling candy. And we started selling popcorn with the books. It was a whole, like, little organization. And I don't think the principal said anything about it because we were just so damn excited about it. But I don't know. It kind of looked fishy. Our sixth grade teacher was just pushing us. Like, oh, yeah, keep making these books. I'm going to throw this popcorn over here, 50 cent. We got this penny candy to go with it. we'd have staff meetings during lunch mod. And it was all types of awesomeness.
But you know what, though, right there is the entrepreneurial spirit was born in you very, very early, huh?
Yeah, it was.
All right, so From that, let's talk a little bit about, because I read about your aspirations to make it to Marvel Comics. And yeah. I think it's a very interesting story. Do you mind sharing that about the many different opportunities that you had to show your work to a representative and ultimately what they said?
I went to CCAD. Again, I love that school to death. And I didn't really know what to do. All I knew was I wanted to draw comic books. The main reason I went to the school there is because they had a comic book class. They had an actual comic book class. And I was like, oh, that's the school for me. I threw all my eggs in one basket and said, forget it. That's where I'm going. So probably my third year there, I started going out to comic shows. And but I wasn't going out to a bunch. So I was probably going to like one or two a year. So I'd go in there. And back then, this is when Marvel and DC had their big booths at Chicago Comic Con and Wizard World and stuff like that. And you stand in line to get your portfolio review, but you stand in line like 4 or 5 hours to get your portfolio review. So I had somebody look at my stuff after waiting all that time, like, oh man, this is good. This is good. But you know, you need to fix this, this, and that. And I was charged, like, he said a lot of stuff I needed to fix, but he said I had some good stuff. So I was pretty excited because it was my first show. My buddy Trevor went with me, and it was like spur of the moment. I just talked to my friend John at home. And back in Cleveland, he told me, dude, this is what you want to do. You need to find your way out to Chicago and go there. So I called Trevor up. He was my college roomie. And Trevor's the one that really pushed my geekdom to the next level. And so he's somebody that I trusted a lot at the time, and I still do. And I said, hey, man, I'm about to drive to Chicago right now. I don't have a hotel room. I just have enough money for gas and to get into Chicago. And I'm going to go show my portfolio to Marvel. And he said, all right, let's go. Like, we drove out there. We slept in the car. We washed up in the public restroom. And we went out. And he walked around the con floor, and I stood in line for 5 hours to show my portfolio. And so I was so juiced up from that whole event because it was, like, my first show and stuff. And I was like, all right. I went home, came back to school, went to work, started improving stuff. And then next year, went to another show. Same thing, got in line, but this time we had a hotel room and stuff. I showed my stuff. They said, hey, you're doing good. This is nice, but now you need to work on this, this, and that. Repeat the process again. And so finally, I come up there, and I'm like, man, there is nothing they can say now but give me a job. In line again, give them my portfolio. This time, the dude that's reviewing it doesn't say anything. He's just nodding his head and just turning through the pages. I'm like, yeah, that's right. I know you ain't got nothing to say because I did everything y'all asked. If you say something, you tripping. So finally, he closed the portfolio, you know, gave me a look and was like, pulled me around to the backside to come with me. And we went behind the Marvel curtains. I was like, this is it. This is it. It is about to happen. I got my mama on speed dial. I'm about to be drawn for Marvel Comics. He pulls out my portfolio again. He's like, man, you are really good storytelling. Your anatomy's real good. You know, I know, you told me you've been up to the booth before several times. You got a lot of feedback from it, and it shows that you're putting in the work to get better. But your style's not a style that we're looking for right now in Marvel Comics. And, like, my world just came crashing down. Like, it was just elevating up, and it just shot down. And I was like, well, what do you mean? What's wrong with the style? And he told me that my style was very urban. And I didn't know what to say. I was pretty speechless. I didn't know if to be pissed off, offended, or what to feel. But I was just like, all right, okay. And closed my portfolio, walked on, did the rest of the show, and then went back home to Columbus. And then I was like, well, if my style's too urban, the only way I took that is that I draw black people when they look like black people. My Asian people look right. Asian, and my Latino right. people look Latino. And I was like, well, I'm just going to draw books that with my style, with people, how they look, and I'm going to make Marvel Comics come to me. And that's how I started doing freestyle comics and the flagship titles, Hot Shot, and I've been doing that for 10 years and just making my books, doing commissions, did a couple other books for a few other people, but putting my heart and soul into Hotshot. You know, Victor Dandridge is somebody that helped take the book to the next level. He added an insurmountable amount of foundation to the title.
We'll talk about that too. But can I come back to Marvel for a minute? What if they called you? If they called you tomorrow, would you go? If they said, "Hey, you know what, Michael? We were wrong a few years ago. We'd love to have you come back. We'd love to give you a job. Here's X amount of money. X amount. You get to work on this title and that title." Would you?
Dude, not gonna perp. Hell yeah. I mean, Marvel. I mean, at the time they can say what they want to say, but the kid in me and wanting to draw comic books. I mean, I'm not gonna. I still want to draw X-Men. I still want to draw Spider-Man. I want to be able to put that on my resume and say,
sure,
I drew Wolverine. This issue of Marvel Comics, Wolverine was drawn by me.
Now, were you a straight Marvel guy, or did you dabble in DC and other companies as well?
I dipped a toe in DC. Okay. I really, you know, I just messed with some Batman, some Superman, really just the big stories. My palette for comic books did not widen until I got to college.
Okay.
And once I got varying opinions about books and ideals and seeing different artistic styles, that's when I started opening up and reading more books than just Marvel.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Well, now you mentioned Freestyle Comics, and also, of course, you have Legacy Rising Publishing that's coming up. Well, that's out, excuse me. And you got some stuff coming out for Legacy Rising. But let's talk a little bit about Hotshot first, because you know, that was a one that you sent over a few samples for me to take a look at. And why don't you tell the folks listening what Hotshot's all about?
Well, the basis of Hotshot is it is loosely based off of my college life. It starts sophomore year at CCAD, and something happened in the world back in 1999. It was a zero event where the extra human population in our world, instead of calling them mutants or superheroes, we call them extras, pretty much disappeared down to zero as far as the mass media and populace know. We lost a lot of good heroes. We lost villains and everything in a huge fight. And the very next day, our Mike, who is the main character, a.k.a. me, wakes up with superpowers out of nowhere. Has no idea where they came from, has no idea why we got them. All he knows is that he's been wanting to be a superhero his entire life. So he just jumps out and starts doing it. And it's an easy job at first because there's not that much adversity for him. He gains a lot of popularity because there's not a lot of other heroes out there at the time. There's a couple of them starting to build back up. One of the big ones is Vigilance. She's like the Superman of the verse, and she is a full-time superhero. But Mike becomes Hotshot, and he connects more with the people in the city because he's stopping small crime, you know, bank robberies, things like that. And he's getting really popular with the people until, when we start our story, he meets something that he's never fought before. The things that he's seen in the past, you know, the things that he's geeked out about, he's fighting an adversary that is relentless, more powerful than him, and seeks nothing but destruction. And he's never faced anything like that. So he kind of gets smacked hard in the face. Like, this job is not as easy as you thought it was going to be. So it's a journey of figuring out what can he do, because he really does not know everything he can do, and how is it connected to what's going on in the world right now?
And he also has that balance of trying to explain it to folks that may not understand, because I know that one of the things that I kind of clued in on and kind of resonated with me was the conflict between Mike and Carla, who is his girlfriend, who seems to have not the full knowledge that he's Hotshot, but there's that dynamic of she doesn't trust him, but he's actually a trustful guy, and there's all that wrapped up in there, which I thought was really, really creative and, again, resonated with me.
Mm-hmm. A lot of credit has to go to Victor for that, because the man is – he knows how to write conversations. He just does. And we push each other, and because when I saw the script for that, and I was like, oh, my God. This is going to be harder than drawing a fight scene, because I have to try my best to capture the emotion that he's writing with this conversation. So I read a lot of comic books, so a lot of that stuff goes back to the hero always gets the girl in the end. Like, everything ends up working out for the guy. But in real life, a lot of stuff does not work out. And that particular relationship did not work out. It wasn't because of superpowers, but it was due to neglect, because I took on a lot at CCAD. I got heavily invested in the school. I was a resident advisor. I was the head of the combo club at the time. I had two jobs on and off campus, plus the schoolwork. So I was doing a lot and taking her for granted. So in a way, it was comparative to being a superhero who's never there because he's always out doing something else. Well, I was always out involved in doing something else. And it just gets tiresome. And when a woman's fed up, a woman's fed up.
I gotcha. Speaking of, so let's talk a little bit about the process with Victor, because he's been on the podcast here and talked about the way in which he goes about his craft. In particularly, I know he says, or he told me and he shared with our listeners that a lot of times he maps things out more in like a movie script when it comes to his particular ideas. So was that hard for you? And first of all, was this the first time you worked with him for Hotshot?
Yes, okay. It is.
So was that weird to get the movie script and you're like, wait a minute, you know, like how was that dynamic to work with Victor?
Actually, it wasn't weird at all, but Victor didn't write me a movie script. Victor took all the stuff that I had written, and first off, it took a while for me to trust Victor because I didn't trust anybody with my characters. and so when I finally did build up the courage to trust him, and I gave it to him, he took the whatever I had written for script and story, the artwork that I did, he took it all home and he was looking over it. Next thing I know, I don't know, maybe like a week, maybe 2 weeks, Victor brings me back a binder. It's like textbook size. And he's like, here, I really like what you're doing. You got a good story. I want to help you make it better. But your writing sucks. And he said it in a polite way. But he pulls no punches. My writing does suck. That's why I draw. So he says, read this and then go back at it and write your story for Hotshot. And Victor can teach a class. He can literally teach a class, because I'm telling you, when I say he wrote me a textbook that examined each panel, the character's emotion, why the characters feel in a certain way or at this moment, pacing, everything. And I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. And it took a second for that to really click and connect with me, because all I saw was, he should write Hotshot. That's all I saw at that time. I was like, oh, he just wrote the first 6 issues of Hotshot. He needs to write it. So I knew the knowledge and stuff and the education that he was trying to give me was there, but I ignored all that. I was like, hey, you should write the book for me and then I draw it. And so that's how Victor and I got started. But there was no difficulty drawing from Victor's script. Okay. As far as like, oh, it was weird because he writes like a movie format. No, it was easy. We had a good communication. At times it was not perfect. We've had our arguments. We've had our strong disagreements. But over the years of us working together, we figured out a system and to have a better understanding of each other, and we're really strong partners. But it wasn't hard at all. And I think because we got to know each other, and we were friends at the same time, and it was almost like when me and Vic first met, it was just like a spark lit, like, oh my God, this dude is just as into this stuff as I am. And you know, it was like, wow, I didn't know this many people existed like that.
Well, let's talk. I have a question. I have a couple of questions still with Hotshot. Hotshot Zero, is that a little homage to the very famous G.I. Joe issue 21, where it's all silent? Or was that just a happy accident?
Actually, that is an homage to Marvel Comics. They used to do once a month, not once a month, but every once in a while, they used to do Nuff Said comic books that had no dialogue in any of them.
Oh, you know what? I vaguely remember those. Vaguely remember those. Okay.
See, and it would just say, enough said.
Yeah, when I saw that, I thought, because that, to me, my fandom began with G.I. Joe comic books, because I was a fan of G.I. Joe toys. And that is, to me, like, the greatest issue that they ever did. You know, Larry Hama did. It was completely silent. You learned about the connection between Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes. So I just, that's where my mind went right away when that happened. I was like, oh, man, that's what it's got to be.
But don't get me wrong, that's a good issue, because I read that, I saw that issue too. That's a good one.
Oh yeah, it's probably, I think probably it's in my top three.
Okay.
Burritos. There seemed to be a theme in Hot Shot. Why? Why is that?
Because dude, if you get to know me and my friends do and my wife, they know I am an out of shape artist. I love to eat. And I love Chipotle burritos. I mean, they are the best. Oh my goodness,
those are the best, hands down.
Hands down.
No I can, one else. I, even though they're like manufactured, let's be honest, Chipotle's a chain. Is they're still the best around?
They are the best fast food chain restaurant out. And I used to work at Chipotle, and their food is just, I could eat Chipotle every day and not get tired of it. And so, in college, I ate a lot, but I had this thing called a metabolism that burnt it up, but now I sit and draw all day, so that metabolism has dissipated. But I had a hearty appetite, so the burritos is part of the fact that I eat a lot.
Okay, gotcha. One other quick comment or question about Hotshot. The significance of the 99 that is on Hotshot's costume, is there some significance behind that, or is it just something that just you thought looked cool with the outfit?
At first, when I first designed it, and I also got some help designing the costume, it was because it looks cool, but it also had to do with the year that I graduated high school. Oh. I'm very, very proud student. And, I was very, very proud of my class. Like, we were a tight-knit family. We did everything together. And I did a lot of firsts with them. Like, my mom was real strict, but I thank her for it, because if she wasn't, I'd be into some bad stuff. But the class of 99 is the first time when I really got to hang out with friends, go out to movies, and, you know, really experience, like, being a teenager.
Gotcha.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, could you repeat that real quick? Because I think the high school, I think we had a little blip with the technology. What school did you go to again? Sorry.
Cleveland School of the Arts.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So that's where you went to school, went to high school in 99 when you graduated, so you worked that into the costume. Okay, all right.
So super proud of it, but over time, it is a part, the number one reason is because that's when I graduated, but it also has to do with the zero event happening in 99. I believe I sent you the newest issue, which doesn't come out to July of 7, and you'll see the 99 on one of our characters. Which, and it's quoted with "Never Forget." So we're starting to build up for a big story arc that we have coming called the Zero of an Emergence, where we're going to answer a big chunk of questions in regards to what happened at the Zero event and where did all these extras go. So Mike, aka Hotshot, wears it in honor of the year he graduated, which means the year he got the powers, and the year of the Zero event.
Which, number 7 is, we have a change in writers with Carrie Kelly's taking over. Is that going to be for the next, say, 7 issues or 8 issues or through the next story arc? Or what's the story with Carrie?
Well, Carrie's taken over for a while. He's probably going to be he's very involved with the plotting of Hotshot. We pretty much have it plotted up in immense detail up to issue 100. Okay. But there are one shots and two shots that are left open, where we just left some space for some random action to occur, kind of almost like an animated series, to allow some different type of character development and stuff. So there could be chances for someone else to come on and write those stories for us right now. It's not synced in, but Carrie has said that he's in for the long haul, because he wants to torture and torment Hotshot.
Well, you also have Heroes International that is coming out in July, correct?
Yes.
Which, why don't you give us a little quick synopsis of what Heroes International is all about?
Heroes International is everything that the Justice League is not. They are a group of...
Now, wait a minute. That's a dig at DC. That's a dig at DC.
No. It's not a bad DC. I mean, you know, the Justice League, they save the day. They get stuff done. They're organized. They're They know what it means to be a superhero team. This team is the opposite. they were thrown together in a hurry after the events of the Zero event. They were doing a lot of casting and searching for new members to be a part of this team because Heroes International disappeared in the Zero event. And they need a team on record that can answer the world's call for danger. And so this team was put together, but it's a bunch of young Thundercats, you know, not really team-oriented. And this is really going to be a story about them figuring out how to gel as a team. One of our main characters, Iron Smith, is being forced in a leadership role when she's not really a field leader. She's more of a stay behind the screen, make plans and build things type of leader, but she's having hard times being an actual field leader. And we have another character named Titan who's one of our plus size extra heroes who's going to have to deal with issues of her size and, you know, being confident, you know, being a superhero, because confidence actually plays a lot into her powers. If she's not confident, her powers won't work. But the more confident she is, the stronger she is. You know, we got class clowns in there like Craig, who does not like to listen to orders at all, who kind of causes issues for him. So we got a lot of different personality types, and Luke Hare is the one writing that. Victor's the one that came up with the idea for Heroes International, and then I've been working on it since then. And then Luke has come on to revamp it a bit with the character personalities and the direction for it. But that is going to be our superhero team book. And it's going to be pretty dang awesome. I'm very excited about it, what we have going on there. So we have elements of what Victor started with Heroes International. And then we have the new stuff that Luke's included and some of the new stuff that I put in there for the plot. So it's really been a passing the baton type of relay race type of thing. And it's been a really invigorating experience working with Victor, who, you know, him and I started this stuff. All this stuff got moving when I started working with Victor, and now we're into another phase and it's being passed on to somebody else to work. Like, hey, all right, here's the pot. Now add your seasonings to it.
Yeah, good. That's a good analogy to it, is adding the seasoning to it, and, you know, different writers, different viewpoints, different ways you could take the book and whatnot. So that I totally get that analogy. That's a very good one. Thanks. You're also go ahead.
No, I was just saying thanks.
Well, you're also too the co-founder and the host of Nerd Centuries. Did I say that correctly? It's Mercenaries, but Nerd Cent.
Yeah, Mercenaries.
Mercenaries. I didn't say that right. Oh man.
It's okay.
It's a tongue twister, man.
It is, but we have that name on lock across all social media. So, I mean, as soon as you type it in, we are the first thing that pops up, and that's the point. Like, we used to be called The Stuff, and we were The Stuff 2 years, and we were having issues with people couldn't find us on SoundCloud or iTunes because there were so many other things called The Stuff. Mm-hmm. So we had a meeting and decided to change the name to The Nerdcenaries, and we grabbed it on across the social media board.
So what could someone expect to hear if they tune into an episode?
You would hear pretty much all types of stuff. Very opinionated people, passionate opinions. It'd be entertaining back and forth because a lot of times that the cast disagrees with each other. I'm actually not on the show right now. I'm on sabbatical from it because I am focusing on things with Legacy Rising. I had to prioritize my attention and drawing Hotshot and then being the creator, editor type of dude over Heroes International and Vigilance, I was spreading me thin. And I really want to make the three books that I'm working on be successful as they possibly can be. So I'm hoping eventually I'll be able, once things are set in a certain standard and, you know, things are flowing well, that I'll be able to jump back on to the live podcasting. Right now, I kind of just stick to posting comments and editorials, game reviews on the Facebook page and stuff as they come up to me. That's pretty much all that's allotted in my schedule. And I'll help put together some midnight release events that we do every once in a while at GameStop. But Luke Hare, again, another guy that I've been working with and I trust, he's kind of taken over the lead for that. Which I appreciate, which allows me to do my stuff at Legacy. So they're having a good time over there. They're getting the website together right now. And they're going to actually be moving more to a website posting article and reviews versus podcasts for the time being.
Okay, I got you. Well, I was going to pick your brain as to what some of the most aggravating parts about doing a podcast, because trust me, I have a laundry list of them.
I have a laundry list as well. That's part of the reason why I am on leave right now.
Okay, all right.
Editing is a pain in the rear end, man. It is a pain.
Yo, it is. That's why I try to do as minimum amount of editing as possible. I don't even care. If I trip over lines like I did earlier, I don't care. I'm not editing that out. I don't care. It's too much.
We had one of the guys on there, he would just cuss all the time. And like, it wouldn't be, sometimes I think it was on purpose because he knew I had to edit it and he'd have a nice little chuckle about it. But, you know, the conversations get passionate and, you know, we get into it. And our sponsor, which is Heroes and Games, which it still is, he's not a big fan of profanity on the podcast, and which I can understand and respect. So we try to keep it in line with that. And it wouldn't be that I couldn't take the profanity out if it was in there. It'd be such a high-pitched, like, tone in the mic. And it'd be such a pain to get that out. Like, it was just like regular conversation, like, oh, beep, you know, I could just do it. But, like, it'd be so much. We got into some arguments on the show, and I think that's part of the appeal of it, because we were genuine in our opinions. But when you get, like, three people going back and forth at it, it gets annoying as heck how to edit it.
Oh, sure. No, I'm with you. I think that probably for me the most aggravating is technology issues. I'm going to say that's going to be the most aggravating for me, is when things don't work right when they should work right. And then, you know, for no reason. No reason whatsoever. I mean,
if it's sitting in the box for a week, has not been knocked down, has not got water on it, but then all of a sudden when you plug it in, ain't no sound coming through.
Right. Exactly. I think that's my biggest gripe. I talked a little bit about this. I had one guest that got, and a guest that was an independent filmmaker that got very, 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 very touchy about wanting to come on and talk about their project. Uh-huh. And for that, I was like, nah, you know what? Never mind. I don't want you to come on. Forget it. If you're gonna send me like you wanted a list of questions, and then when I sent them to you, you sent me back responses, and they were very sanitized and very. I don't want to talk to you. I'm sorry. I just don't. Uh-huh. I don't think that's genuine and organic. So I think that was my only other major gripe that I ever had. Was I was like, I'm sorry, you were not doing this. I'm just gonna cancel the. You can just go do something else. I don't. This is not Fox News. I don't need. I don't need. You know, I don't need a script and handlers and PR people and all that. I don't want to do that. So just
I'm just making a podcast, man. I just want to talk.
I'm making this dinky little podcast just for my own. You know, for my own creative endeavors. You know, so. Anyways, all right, let's get back on track. Let's talk a little bit about your influences when it comes to your artwork. Who are some of your influences?
Oh, I can't pronounce half their names, which is really terrible. But Frank Cho is a huge influence. I look to him for a lot of women. Adam Kubert was the first guy for me. I love his storytelling. Joe Mad, of course, without a shadow of a doubt, Joe Mad. Despite him not putting out a book or not, his artwork is still fantastically amazing. Arthur Adams, J. Scott Campbell.
You know what?
Alex Ross.
If I may say, I see quite a bit of J. Scott Campbell in Hot Shot. So that clearly, you know, resonates with that influence there.
Yeah, I was looking at his stuff and studying stuff for a while on women. He just has a knack. The man has it down. It's flat out. He has it down for drawing sexy women. The look in the eye, the curl in the lips, the shape of the face. His hair is really phenomenal. I used to use his body reference for women a lot when I first got started. And now I lean more towards Frank Cho, because his women have more meat on them, and I tend to try to draw my characters as people that you would see on the streets. And Ryan Ottley is probably he's probably my biggest influence, but he's my biggest motivator and inspiration. because I love Ryan Ottley's work, and I am constantly trying to chase him. I'm constantly trying to keep up with him and chase him. Stuart Immonen? Immonen?
Oh, yeah. Immonen.
I know I pronounced that wrong. Love his work so very much. Dude is fantastic. Probably like I keep a stack of books every time I pull out my comics or I'm about to draw. Those are some of the artists that I always pull over with me to get my juices going before I start drawing.
If you could pick one person to co-create a book with, who would it be?
Wow. That's crazy. That's wow. Never been asked that.
You want to think about that one? I have a couple more questions for you if you want to think about that one. We'll come back to that.
Let me come back to that.
Michael, you think about it. You are a big fan of Gravity Falls. Why is
huge.
That?
Gravity Falls is amazing. Are you serious?
I don't want to start an argument. I don't want to start a beef. I know a little bit about Gravity Falls. I've never watched a full episode. I got to be honest with you. So I can't say it's awesome, it's not awesome. I don't know. But convince me. Why should I watch it?
Number one, off the bat, that show is made by people our age. People that we grew up with, that watch the same cartoons and play the same video games and watch the same shows and all the trends that we liked as kids that we know about, those are the people making this show right now.
All right, okay.
There was an 8-bit episode. The first episode that I really sat down and watched where the Street Fighter character came to life and he was done in 8-bit the whole time. You knew he was a Ryu rip, but you didn't care. And he and Dipper had him go protect him from a bully, and the dude stayed in 2D the whole time during the episode. And there were just all these nods back to Street Fighter while the cartoon was going on. The art direction is effing wonderful. I mean, those character designs are beautiful. The art direction is crazy good. I just love looking at it. The character development and the character story arcs are awesome. I fell in love with each one of those characters as this story went on. And the backdrop of what it's leading up to for the finale, or what it has led up to for the finale, they left all these hints and stuff in there. And I'm never into that stuff. That's like I could care less about that stuff unless it's the Marvel Cinematic Universe or the DC Cinematic Universe is trying to figure it out. But like my oldest daughter, AJ, was on it. Me and her watched it together. She was always bringing me up these little facts and things that she would find on YouTube and stuff. And it was just a clever, smart, inventive cartoon all the way around.
All right, I'm going to try to catch a couple of episodes.
Dude, they only, all it's right, only, you convinced me. It's only two seasons.
Okay.
It's only two seasons, and then the series finale is a movie. It is awesome.
All right. I'll have to keep my eye out for that. So, you're going to be at Space in a few weeks, aren't you?
Yes, I will.
That's, of course, going on April 9th and 10th over at the Northland Performing Arts Center. It's the 17th annual event, the Small Press and Alternative Comics Expo. What does it mean to you to be at Space as not only just a fan, but also as a creator? What does it mean to you to be at Space?
To be at Space is everything. Because that is the first Comic-Con that Victor and I went to with our books. Yeah, with Hotshot. That's the first show we went to, and that's where we got known in the indie circuit because we were extremely loud. We worked the Space comic book convention like it was Wizard World Chicago. We bought out two tables. We came there with like our sponsor. We had our full color indie superhero book. Like at that time, nobody was making full color like 22 page superhero comic books and then calling themselves an indie. Like indies were always known for like these strange stories that came out of the left field, and you know, they'd be done in black and white and gray scales with a color cover. But no, we were going for the full Marvel Image DC print. And we had at the time what we thought was a very solid story. And so when we came in there, I think Vic and I entertained Bob a lot because we were just running up and down our aisles yelling. Or we'd be at our table like, all right, it's 3:00. come get some free art with a purchase of a book. Like, we just sit there and make up these deals and get people over to our table. Or, you know, people will walk past and me and Vic will look at them and, you know, we figure out what we're like. If mentally, we would just click and then figure out what we're going to say to these people right now just to get them to come over to our table and start pitching the book. And it got to the point where Bob was like, I said, hey, do you care if I get on the mic so I can announce some stuff happening at my table? He was like, go ahead. And that was probably the biggest mistake Bob could have ever made in his life. Because I was on the mic for the entire show. And that's how we got traffic over there. And then we got noticed by comicrelated.com. We got noticed by a few other people. And we did some interviews. And, you know, people read the book. And we were getting really good reviews for it. And so if there was no space, there would be no Vic and Mike starting off. We wouldn't know how to do a convention without him. And we got labeled the masters of self-promotion because of our space endeavors.
Which that title is well deserved. Well deserved. So do you have anything coming out, any surprises for space this year? Or you're just going to be there just doing what you do?
Well, the targeted goal for space is to have the first 7 issues of Hotshot there with the new Legacy Rising covers. I'm putting together a binder with some previews of our titles. Hotshot number 7, which is drawn by me, written by Carrie Kelly, colored by Veronica Smith, inked by Gary Mitchell. We have Carrie Kelly on the letters as well, and we had a couple other inkers. Kendra Hale help out with some backup inks on that story. So I'm thinking I'll have some preview pages of that in there and our issue 8, because I'm almost done with that as well. Then we're going to have some promo work for Vigilance, which is being written by Micah Cox. And it is going to be drawn by Meljoy Juan. He is from the Philippines. So I always have to think and slow down to pronounce his name right. But he's doing the pencils and inks on Vigilance. And very excited about that book, because Vigilance has been, besides hurry up and get the next issue of Hotshot out, Vigilance has been the most requested character to have a title besides, you know, asking for the next book of Hotshot. So there's a lot of hype behind her and a lot of excitement about her coming out with her first book, and it's going to be an ongoing series. And Veronica Smith's also coloring that as well. Danny Cooper's on the letters for that. And then we got Heroes International. So I'm planning on having previews for that, because we're about 15, 16 pages in on that. If I can get it pulled off, I want to have the covers as posters there as well. But there's just so much stuff that we're trying to do.
Sure.
But Luke Hare is writing Heroes International. Quinn McGowan, he is the creator of Wildfire. He is inking and drawing Heroes International. It's a lot of stuff that I'm trying to use space to start the promo campaign. Mm-hmm. Doug Sims is the owner of Legacy Rising Publications, and they are working on the overall campaign for Legacy, because we are launching all the books in July. And I give Doug notification of everything that I'm doing. So at these shows, the shows that we're at before the actual big show, in July, I try to put together as much stuff as I can to get people interested in the books coming out. Because I don't think a lot of people realize that you're having this is my honest opinion, and I believe it with all my heart, that I am literally working with some of the best independent creators in the business right now. And not just on my books. Like, I have these people that I'm working with that I can say are my coworkers as they work on their titles for Legacy Rising. But, like, we're all under this one banner of Legacy. And it's kind of a hard thing to grasp the concept of unless somebody's telling you this. Because, you know, who was really there? Who was really there to take notice of when Marvel was starting on their foundation floor? And you're like,
right.
Oh, wait, they're building Marvel Comics right now. Like, you weren't, nobody was in knowledge of that type of thing that was happening. And so, like, as I look around and see the updates that we're getting, and you know, I talk to Vic and Ren McKenzie, they're underneath this banner as well. And I see some of the things that they're doing and they're working on. And I'm like, man, like, we're on the foundation floor. We're making this company happen right now. And, you know, the city of Columbus needs to be aware of that. Like, you're about to have comic books in your backyard that you can just go to. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not saying stop buying Marvel Comics, because I'm not. I'm still going to get my Spider-Man books. My son is named after Spider-Man. My daughter is named after Wolverine. And my other daughter is named after Jean Grey. But technically, Mary Jane. Because her name is Myla Jean Watson, so MJ Watson.
Ah, nicely done there. It works on multiple levels.
Yes, I slid that in under the radar because, you know, there was this whole argument, discussion, like, we're not going to name her Mary Jane because you think about marijuana when that's on. No, you don't. You do not think about marijuana. But I was like, oh, well, we'll name her after Jean Grey. Put Jean in her middle name. MJ Watson.
Boom. All right. There you go. Well, let's go back to the question real quick that I stumped you on. You still want to talk some more about Legacy? Is there some more things about Legacy Rising that you wanted to throw in there real quick before we go back to that question?
Oh, dude, I could talk about Legacy all day. I'm so, excited. I know some people may wonder, why did I stop doing Freestyle Comics and venture for Legacy? And it's exactly what I wanted to do with Marvel. I was doing my own thing, creating books, selling books on my own. Of course, you know, it wasn't a perfect situation, and I made my own mistakes. I made some bad choices, and I've begun to come back from those choices within the last 2 years or whatnot, trying to be better than that and, you know, improve on myself and my mentality for, you know, making the right decision when it comes to business. And here comes this company, Legacy Rising, saying, hey, I like what you do. I like your book. I want you to come make a book under the Legacy banner. Effing right. Let's go. I mean,
sure.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with, you know, I love everything I've done with Freestyle Comics, and Freestyle Comics may be taking a back seat right now while I'm doing the Legacy stuff. It's always going to be a part of me and part of my heart. But this is why I draw all this stuff. This is why I work on the books that I work on, or why I'm drawing Hotshot, is that, you know, it to be picked up. And I still own all the rights to the characters. I'm still over the books. So it's pretty much the same thing, except now I do answer to somebody. And sometimes that may be needed, you know?
Yeah, right. There's pros and cons to both. Yeah.
There's kind of like a weight lifted off of me a bit with doing it like this, and I've been able to turn out so much more artwork now underneath the banner than I did, you know, by myself. But I also attest that to my own focus and dealing with, you know, my life and trying to be organized. So it's kind of like a, you know, it's kind of like a all-in situation here. Got to make this work, or, you know, this is it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, before we start wrapping things up here, Michael, you didn't answer the question yet. Anybody at all that you could co-create something with, who would you pick and why?
Like with me drawing and then I pick the writer?
Sure. Let's go that way. Okay.
Oh, goodness gracious. Let's see here. All right. There's some good writers here, man. I am probably gonna say Robert Kirkman.
Okay.
You're
a fan of his writing?
Invincible is my favorite comic book.
Okay, all right.
Flat out. Invincible is the most consistent comic book that is out on the market right now. Mm-hmm. It's the only book that I can read in like 5 minutes and be upset by the time I get to the end of it because I gotta wait 30 days for it.
Yeah. That's the sign of a great book.
Yeah.
No doubt. Yes.
I've got every single issue of it. It is, like I said, it's my main motivation. It is my main drive to be on that level and eventually surpass that. A lot of my storytelling beats, I take notes from Kirkman, even though I'm a terrible writer. I can plot the heck out of something, but when it comes to breathing life in these characters' words, it's not my forte. That's why I passed the buck right there. But, yeah, I probably would say Kirkman would be the one I would want to work with on a title, on a book. I would say indies, but I'm getting to work with all the indies that I want to work with.
Yeah, sure. With all due respect to all those very talented folks out there in the indies, yeah, I mean, you know, most definitely to pick anyone you know, Kirkman. That would be, you know, an upper echelon guy. You know, let's be honest, he's the man right now, especially these last 5 years, 6 years with The Walking Dead taking off and whatnot. So
yeah.
All right, well, let's start wrapping things up. Where can people get in touch with you via social media if they wanted to get in touch with Mike Watson?
Oh, on Facebook and Instagram. Instagram and Twitter. It's Art of Mike Watson.
Okay.
Same thing with Facebook. And you can find me. I'm a moderator for the Legacy Rising Publications Facebook page. And you could also look me up, CBUS Art Geeks on Facebook. I teach an art class on Wednesdays and Fridays, showing kids right now for this session how to make comic books. And LegacyRising.com, which is about to launch here in a few days. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Yeah. And, of course, at Nerdcenaries, our Facebook page on Nerdcenaries, and you can find Nerdcenaries on Instagram, Twitter. Website will be launching there in a couple of days. And,
where can you find some episodes? Nerdcenaries.
YouTube page and iTunes. Okay. We have videos and podcast episodes that you can still listen to. We're actually putting together an event for Legacy Rising that's hosted by the Nerdcenaries in association with GameStop May 9th. We're doing a midnight release party for Drake Uncharted 4. And we are going to have a bunch of games and prizes. We actually will be giving away a free copy of Drake Uncharted 4 for our raffle contest and a bunch of other stuff at the GameStop in Riddlesburg.
Cool. Well, hey, Michael Watson, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. I hope it was fun.
Yes, it was fun. I enjoyed it a lot.
And if you are coming out to space on April 9th or 10th, stop on by, say hello to Michael. Say hello to everyone there, but definitely stop by and say hello to Michael. He's a great dude. And again, man, I appreciate you coming on.
Well, I got a question for you because I didn't get your feedback. What did you think of the Hot Shot series? And you can be absolutely honest. You don't have to butter my cupcakes.
I tell you this. I liked it because to me, I could picture and I can connect to. I connected right away with the gripe and the drama between Carla and Michael. I connected to that because I think that everyone in their lives has been in that situation of being in that relationship where you're trying to hold on to it, but you sometimes can't because there's some things outside of your control.
Uh-huh.
So I really connected with that. I really thought that was, to me, the strongest part of the book for me. I thought your artwork was phenomenal. As I said, I could see a lot of J. Scott Campbell in there. You know, I think I kept going back, going that's got a lot of hint of Danger Girl to it. You know, It's got a little tinge to it. I dug it, man. I dug it, and I think anybody that comes out to see you at Space or any other convention, they should pick up a copy or two or three or seven.
That's a good number.
That's a good number. I just came off the top of my head. You know,
it's cool, babe.
All right, well, once again, Michael, thank you for coming on, man. I'm going to throw it to a real quick break, ladies and gentlemen, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up this episode. Well, there you have it, my conversation with the very enthusiastic Michael Watson, and I'm so glad he came on the PVDcast to talk about Hotshot, Heroes International, Legacy Rising Publications, Freestyle Comics, Nerdcenaries. There, I said it correctly this time. That's a great name, but it's a tough one to say. But that podcast that he was a part of for a while, and man, you know what? I'm so glad that he got a chance to come on again. Find him on Facebook, Michael Watson, or follow him on Twitter at Art of Mike Watson. Also the same username at Instagram. And, you know, check out, of course, Legacy Rising Publications and their Facebook page as well. They got a website coming up real soon. And you know what, folks? Let's support some things that are happening right here in the capital city of Columbus, Ohio. And Legacy Rising Publications would be a great opportunity to get involved and support something homegrown. And I'm going to throw it out there one more time. Don't forget about Space. It's coming up here April 9th and 10th. Go to backporchcomics.com to find out all the information. And before we get to wrapping up this episode, let's talk about a couple of other things real quick that's coming up on, well, my calendar and, well, maybe hopefully your calendar. April 16th, Coshocton, Ohio at the Hopewell School. It is Big Guns Jeff Cannon's farewell show, Ohio Championship Wrestling. Definitely check out OCWrestling.net for all the information about tickets and whatnot. I believe it's doors open at 7, 7:30 bell time. I'm going to be there doing my thing, you know, doing my ring announcing thing. That's what I do, among many other things. Also, too, do not forget about my good friends at Old Wrestling. That's right. They got a big show coming up, the Speakeasy Spectacular. It is happening on April 29th in Lakewood, Ohio. Mahal's 20 lanes. 7 o'clock is, I believe, when things are kicking off. So check out oldwrestling.com, O-L-D-E wrestling.com to find out more information. If you're interested in seeing some cool wrestling and quite frankly, just having a darn good time, check out Old Wrestling. Guaranteed that if you show up, you're going to enjoy yourself. But anyways, if you missed on where to get in touch with those folks at Old Wrestling or Ohio Championship Wrestling, just go over to the links page of pvdcast.com and you'll find all the information that you might need to get in touch with those individuals or anyone that's been on this podcast. So, with that being said, hey, you know what time it is. It's time for me to tell you about something I think is cool, something I think is noteworthy, a.k.a., yeah, there's the music, Orlando's Fade! All right. In complete, absolute honesty, I gotta say that I think that this might be the first time that I repeat an Orlando's fave, but it's kind of the same but kind of different. I'm gonna tell you what my fave is for this episode of the PVD cast, and it is the Fox television show Gotham. And I know that I've mentioned this before and how I really like the show, but man, it has really, over the last 3-4 episodes, taken a new turn, and I'm just gonna re-highlight it, so to speak. They are really putting forth, taking Bruce Wayne to a dark area, man, to becoming the Dark Knight. And that's what I appreciate. That's what I dig. I dig that because I think that Bruce Wayne is an interesting character. And what they're doing with that character on that show is amazing. And you know what? I got to be honest. I don't remember the young man's name that plays. In fact, I'm going to Google it here real quick. Yes, David Mazouz, who plays young Bruce Wayne, I believe that's how you pronounce his last name, is doing a fabulous job. Fabulous job. And, you know, there's some other great storylines going on. You know, Hugo Strange has popped up, who B.D. Wong is playing him to a hilt. I mean, just bizarre and weird. You know, you got this whole thing going on with Jim Gordon. I don't want to spoil it for folks, but I gotta say, it's getting really good. And if you haven't checked out Gotham, you need to. Go on some streaming service. I don't know what it's on. I'm sure it's on Hulu. So go find it. Go to Fox On Demand. Watch season one. Start watching season two. You won't regret it. I think it's awesome. But since we're talking about the Bat, gotta be honest. I haven't gone to the theater yet to see Batman v Superman. I hope that doesn't make me lose some cred with all you comic book folks out there. But I just haven't. I gotta be honest, I haven't been very excited for that movie, so I think that's part of it. It's not like Deadpool or Captain America Civil War or X-Men Apocalypse, which I'm very excited for. Like, those movies I've been jazzed up about, and I just gotta be honest, my enthusiasm, if my enthusiasm for those other movies was a 10, or is a 10, Batman v Superman is kind of like a 7.5 or an 8. So I haven't seen it. I'm hoping to see it. Please, if you're tweeting me, don't spoil things for me, please. And I will tell you where you can tweet me here in a minute. But so I'm hoping here to get to see it this week. So knock on wood, I will be able to do so. All right, let's talk about where you can get in touch with me. You can follow me on Twitter by simply going to @PVDMVP. You can also follow me on Instagram, PVDMVP. You want to shoot me an email, do so at johnorlando@pvdcast.com. Of course, the pvdcast.com is the online home for yours truly. Hey, if you're listening on SoundCloud, like me on that. Tell others about it. Tell anyone that's listening about this podcast, and let's spread the word. I mean, I'm getting the momentum back, ladies and gents. I'm not lying. I lost a little bit due to the technical issues, but I'm getting it back. I'm coming back. I know, QLO Cool J, don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years, rocking my peers. All right, I'm going to stop. Hey, it's time for me to go, so I thank you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later.